Hello, and welcome to the Sunshine Sound Podcast with your host, Christine Mathias.
There's value in just creating and making music, sitting down at a piano with all the lights off and just letting yourself create something. There's value in that because it's uninhibited emotion, right? But the value in something like rock and roll camp or something like your own working through an instrument is that you're setting yourself goals, and sometimes you don't meet those goals. Sometimes you don't learn the song in time for the recital and you fail, and you have to learn how to deal with that failure in this really safe environment.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode number 7 of the Sunshine Sound Podcast. In today's episode, I interviewed Emma Bird. She is a local musician and also a music therapist. So I met Emma at the San Diego Rock and Roll Camp for Girls. They are this really amazing organization which empowers girls and women through music. So I'm going to be interviewing a few people I've met through that camp in the next few weeks, so you'll definitely learn more about that. In today's episode, Emma and I talk about a lot of great stuff. We talk about music therapy. We talk about Emma's organization called The Courage to Create, and also we get into the music scene in San Diego and what that looks like. But we also talk about things like building your toolbox as a musician, finding your voice, the human nature of creativity in music, and empowering women. Emma writes really beautiful music, so we'll have a chance to listen to one of her tracks. I really enjoyed this one. I hope you do too. So today in the studio, I have Emma Bird. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Hello.
Yeah. So like I told you, the thing I'm really curious about, why I wanted to invite you in, was hearing about music therapy. So what is music therapy?
So music therapy, it's like simplest explanation is using music to reach a non-musical goal. So that would be using music to work on social, cognitive, motor, emotional goals, anything like that.
So how long have you been doing that?
So I've been practicing for coming up on 4 years, I think. Yeah. So before that, I did a 6-month internship. And then before that, I did my undergrad in it. So to be a music therapist, you need to hold an undergraduate or a master's degree or both. Mm-hmm. Do a 6-month internship, which is a clinical internship. So you're working directly with clients and developing your clinical skills. And then you sit for a board certification, which the credential is MTBC. And mm-hmm. then you maintain that as you're going through your career through, you know, continued education and stuff like that.
Gotcha. And mm-hmm. did you say you're still in school now?
Yeah. So I'm just a mega nerd. And I finished my undergrad, finished my internship, started working, and then I was like, but there's so much more to learn. So yeah, I went back and I'm doing my master's right now with Berklee College of Music, which is where I did my undergrad as well.
Wow. So what's the master's in? It's in music therapy?
Mm-hmm. It's a master's of music therapy.
Wow. So you mm-hmm. like to stay busy.
Yeah. Probably too busy.
And so what do your clients like look like? I mean, in terms of how do they find you? Is it like a traditional kind of therapist arrangement? Are you going into hospitals or what? How does someone find a music therapist? Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. So every music therapist caseload looks a little different. For me personally, I'm a contractor, and the reason I do that is because I like to have a very varied, very varied caseload. And so I work all over the place. I work in schools. I work in private clinics. I work with private clients in their homes. I work in hospitals. I work at the International Rescue Committee with high school girls that are refugees. So I have a really varied caseload. But the easiest way to find a music therapist is to Google music therapist in my area, or to go to musictherapy.org, and there's a listing of all music therapists.
Wow. So do you think that it's like if anyone is having any kind of stress or depression or whatever in their life, that they might go to like talk therapy? Is music therapy also a similar option?
So yeah, it's a different modality. And so talk therapy is really, really valuable. And the training that counselors and MFTs and licensed mental health counselors have is really, really valuable and important. And so that's a person that you would go to work through some serious stuff. Music therapy is for someone who maybe that doesn't work for them. Maybe sitting in a room and talking is too direct, and it's just not, they're not able to access the process and the progress that they want to. And so coming to a music therapist, you kind of find the back door to those processes and that progress. And so music provides this like scaffolding and also this safe space in order to explore those emotions. There are music therapists who are more trained in terms of psychotherapy, and so they would be the people you would seek out to help you with something like emotion, like depression or anxiety or something like that. But then there are other music therapists, they're also an MTBC, but they work entirely with special education, and that person might not be the best fit if you're just trying to work on something like depression.
Hmm. And so within those different areas, do you have a certain specialization?
So my internship was mostly special education and older adults. And so that's what I originally started doing. But my heart really lies in something called community music therapy. And that's using music to empower change in a society level. So that's empowering the individual to access their own resilience through music, empowering people to use their own voices, and supporting positive social change.
So that seems to tie in really well with the rock and roll camp for girls, which is how I met you. Yeah, so do you want to talk like a little bit how you got involved with that camp and how you feel like that ties into your work with music therapy?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, rock and roll camp for girls is obviously one of my nearest and dearest communities in San Diego. It's so special. But I actually found it because Jessica Bell, who also works with the organization, and she was one of our lady campers this year, she was like, "Hey, Emma, I know you do music and there's this cool thing. You should maybe do it." And so I took a risk and I was like, you know what? I have an easy caseload this summer. Why not? And I volunteered, and it was the first year was like the most terrifying and amazing experience ever. And it was, I think maybe we're in this conversation during this camp of reflecting on where we were then versus now as instructors and mentors. You know, the camps, they like really provide, they provide space for the campers to grow and change, but it's also for us, you know? And so it's been a really important tool for me to experience the power of music. And yeah, that was a bit tangential. Sorry.
No, that's great. Yeah. And I think that's my experience with volunteering for that camp, I think it really gets to like the basics of what music can do. And because when I think about music therapy, I think about how sometimes music can be frustrating, you know, like do you feel that when doing music therapy or working at the camp, that it can be not always a completely stress-free experience?
Well, I think that's the best thing about music is that it's not easy, you know? It's definitely innate. It's part of us as humans, right? You can go back to the earliest humans, and they were creating bone flutes in caves, right? Like, music has always been here. And so it's part of our human experience, but it's not simple, especially when you think about music as it is now in society, which is writing songs, having bands, this very structured, you're not just creating sound, you're creating a product. And in some ways, that's really challenging and hard. And in some ways, it's really, really valuable. There's value in just creating and making music, sitting down at a piano with all the lights off and just letting yourself create something. There's value in that because it's uninhibited emotion, right? But the value in something like rock and roll camp or something like your own working through an instrument is that you're setting yourself goals. And sometimes you don't meet those goals. Sometimes you don't learn the song in time for the recital and you fail. And you have to learn how to deal with that failure in this really safe environment. And that's one of the best things about music is that you, it's like a, what's the word, microcosm, right? So you experience these ups and downs, these like joys and really challenging moments and you fail and then you keep going and you get better and you can tangibly see the progress because you used to not know how to hold a guitar and now you can play five chords. And so, yeah, I think that the challenge and the frustration is one of the more valuable parts of music.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying about a safe space is important, too. I think that's a big part of Rock and Roll Camp for Girls and for Ladies Camp is creating that safe space. Do you think that that space doesn't always exist in music?
Definitely. I think that's another reason that music therapists are so important, because we have the training to build that space for whoever we're working with. You know, the average instructor, their job is to make someone learn a skill, right? A music instructor is there to make sure that you know how to finish playing that Chopin piece by the end of December. But a music therapist's job is to make sure that you love what you're doing and that you come to music and it gives you access to the truest part of yourself. And I think that that's a really nuanced difference because educators often do that. They often do create that safe space, but that's not their job. Their job is to make sure you learn. But my job is to make sure that you have access to the best version of yourself.
I like that. Yeah. And I think that that all musicians could benefit from that kind of change in mindset. Do you think that being a music therapist changes the way that you approach music yourself when you're playing and creating your own music?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. I actually, it's funny that you asked that question because I now part singing is a really big part of my life. I sing every day for work. I'm a singer-songwriter. I'll often sing with my friends, and it's become a very uninhibited part of myself. But historically, that's not been true. When I was younger, I actually studied piano in college, which is probably why all of my little anecdotes are learning classical pieces. But yeah, so in college, I was a piano player, and before college, I was a piano player and a flute player, and I was never a singer because I remember when I was really little singing in like the required choir, right? And someone, you know, some mean girl being like, oh, her voice sounds silly or something, you know, something like that. But it was at a really formative age. I must have been like 5 or 6. And so I just stopped singing and I never sang. And sometimes I would like sing if my parents were at work and like my house was empty and it was just me and my dog. And I would like sing while I played piano. But the second I heard the garage door open, I was silent and I would never. That was like not part of who I was. And then I got to college and I started like tiptoeing around it because I was studying music therapy. I knew that I was going to have to be singing with groups and everything. But every clinical practicum I was in, I was always very, very quick to say, but I'm not a singer. I'm an instrumental, but I'm not a singer. And part of that was the stigma of singers at Berkeley, because there was definitely a stigma around being a vocalist rather than an instrumentalist at Berkeley. But part of it was still this like inner struggle that I was having of like identifying as a singer and finding my voice. As I went through college, I started writing more songs. I had a friend who was a production engineer major, and he needed to record someone for a project or something. So he brought me into the studios at school and recorded me singing a song I had written. And it was really challenging, like playing guitar and then singing separately because I'd never done that before. But then I went into the sound booth and he like played it back. And I heard myself for the first time and I was like, wait, that's me? What did you do? Like, what effect did you put on that? He was like, no, like I didn't put any effects on it. I just recorded you. Like, I'm going to edit it later. And I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that's what I sounded like. And so that was like a real click for me of realizing that I wasn't using my voice because I had told myself I couldn't use my voice. And from there, it was just kind of like a cascade. And I, you know, started writing more and singing more, and now it's a huge part of my identity. And, you know, I carve out time every week to go sing at a yoga class because accessing my voice is a really sacred thing to me now because I went through so much to get there. And so I'm really intimately aware of that feeling of I can't do music, I can't be a musician or access music, like that's not me, I can't. That phrase, I can't, so many people use it. And so I think that's why my passion has become, when someone says that, immediately turning around and being like, okay, here's how you can. Here's how you can access that. And taking that role of the person who can empower rather than the person that's like, well, you're right, maybe you're not a singer.
Right. Yeah, it's really too bad that those single experiences that we have in those formative years can silence us for so long. And do you find that a lot in your work, that people have just individual experiences that, like, I even found that, like, at Ladies Rock Camp, like hearing the stories and some of the things that the women have been through, like, it, like you said, I think we're all innately musical, and for so many of us there is one point when for someone shuts us down for one reason or another. So do you feel like that comes up a lot with a lot of people?
Yeah, and I don't even necessarily think that it's kept to just music. I think it's creativity in general. I think that as kids, we are in this space where we're creating and exploding and learning and all of this, and it's beautiful. And I feel like we prune that part of ourselves away as we get older because we realize, oh, yeah, we do have to get the job. We do have to pay the bills. We do have to, you know, X, Y, Z. And actually, San Diego is such a special place because I feel like the people here have pruned that less than other places. I'm sure you experienced that coming from New England. Like, there's more openness to that exploration and creativity, but it's still lacking. And so I think in my work, it kind of goes two ways. You know, when I'm working with someone, it's not always them learning an instrument or playing. A lot of times, for instance, in the hospital, if I'm working on pain management or anxiety management or just emotional well-being in general with someone, it's about looking back and saying, yeah, music was a really important part of my life, and it reflects the journey that I've been on. And so you'll have someone be like, oh, I like music, but I'm not a musician. And I'll say, oh, okay, what band do you like? What song do you like? And they'll be like, oh, I don't know. I grew up around this time, so there was this and this and this. And having been doing this for a while, I can kind of connect the dots and say, oh, what about this song? And sometimes they're like, no, I hate that song. But more often than not, they're like, oh, yes, I love that song. And I'm like, oh, great, let's listen to it. Sometimes I play it for them. Sometimes we sing it together. Sometimes we literally just listen to a recording of it. And it really is the back door to that process where they had no idea that they had this music within them. And suddenly this music has opened the door to, you know, the divorce that they had when they were 32 and the baggage that they've been carrying from that, you know, ever since then, and how being in a hospital bed has brought all that back for them. And, you know, and they have this moment to honor that they're going through this crazy thing, right? And music is what gives them the space to do that. So it is reminding people that those moments don't define the fact that they can't quote unquote do music now. But it's also recognizing that even if you're not a musician, music can open up your experience.
I like that. And that's so the name of your, you have an organization, The Courage to Create, and I love the name of that, because it does take courage. It's the trusting that you're going to open yourself up and good things will happen. Yeah, is that, where did that name come from?
So The Courage to Create is a program that I created with my colleague, Vanessa Kontopoulos, who's another music therapist in the area. She owns and runs Amplify Music Therapy. And she's an amazing music therapist and an amazing mom and an amazing friend. And we shared this vision to create a program that would empower women through music. And this program was kind of taking shape I mean, I think it was shortly after I volunteered at my first rock and roll camp, but it was something I've kind of held with me for a long time. I went to an all-girls high school, and even though that sounds like the worst thing, it was actually the best thing. Just having a community of women that I really consider sisters and I'm still so close with. And so since then, I've been carrying kind of this torch for women empowerment and women lifting up other women. And when Vanessa was taking over Amplify, she, you know, was looking at what kind of program she could add to the offerings. And I was like, Vanessa, you know, I'm really excited about this idea of women empowerment through music. What do you think? Do you think we could do it? And it floated around. We had a million different ideas of populations we would work with, programs we would run, this, that, and the other thing. And we somehow got connected with the International Rescue Committee in City Heights and with a woman who runs the Girls Academy. And the Girls Academy is an after-school program for high school-age girls. We just went in and offered our services to provide music things. And we ended up turning into ukulele and songwriting the first year. So half the girls learned ukulele, half the girls were writing a song, and then we brought those two skills together, and the ukulele girls picked out the chords, and the songwriting girls brought the lyrics, and we wrote a melody, and it was amazing what they came up with. It was a song about where they had come from, and where they're going, and owning their identity, and being resilient. Mm-hmm. And it was, I mean, every time I hear that song, I just start crying, which is funny because I don't cry. because it was so pure. And that's what songwriting does. So that, the Courage to Create, we also ran women's songwriting circles at Riff Studios in Bird Rock, where on Sunday evenings, like once a month or so, we were coming together and sharing songs. And that's been on a bit of a hiatus, but it'll come back around. And we're always exploring new opportunities, ways to support women through music around the community. And we just house everything under the name The Courage to Create, because that's all any of it is, you know, ladies taking a chance and sharing what they're creating. Yeah,
that's great. What do you think is kind of the power of women working together with creating, and why do you think that women kind of need that space?
Ooh, that's a weighted question. Well, the patriarchy to start.
Yes, sure.
I actually do think that that's a huge part of it. Women make up more of this earth's population than men, like statistically speaking, but men hold the power. They still do. You can see it in corporate America. You can see it in small business America. There are more men in charge than there are women. And that's just an undeniable fact. And there are so many incredible women doing incredible things that need to be recognized for the incredible things that they're doing. And so part of the challenge with that is that when you have mostly men taking up leadership roles, women see the opportunities to become a leader as few and far between. And so it immediately creates a competitive atmosphere. And I think you see that with women, really strong leaders. Instead of seeing each other and being like, wow, what a strong woman. I want to get to know her and support her because I'm inspired by how strong and powerful and how she's leading this project or this whatever. Instead of that, I think it brings up an insecurity in us as women of, oh, if that person is succeeding, then that's one less spot for me to succeed in. And I think that's a problem. And I think it's a mindset that we see frequently throughout society. And so I want to be on the side of shutting that mentality down, because I think that true success and progress for people in general, not just for women, for all people, comes when instead of seeing each other as competition, we see each other as inspiration. And so the value of women lifting up women is that we are explicitly shutting down this systematic competitiveness that I think has taken root in our society.
Right. I like the way that you phrase that, that it's not so much like a women against men thing. It's that now it's more like it is a women against women thing, and we're trying to flip that. And that's one of the amazing things about Ladies Rock Camp, is seeing how these women build each other up and work together. And also seeing how many projects I've seen come out of that with the volunteers and everyone, you know, doing other projects together. Is that how you, because you play music with a variety of groups in the city. Is that like, did you meet them all through volunteering with camp?
No, I met all the people in San Diego in a million different ways. Mm-hmm. Music therapy, a lot of music therapists. We, you know, have a small community. Some of them I met through rock camp. Some of them I just met because everyone runs in the same circle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say that music therapy and rock camp are my two greatest communities.
Sure. Yeah. And so you did send me one of your songs that I would love to play. I have seen love. This is such a beautiful track.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, so let's take a quick break and listen to that one.
There's a trouble brewing in my feet. Found themselves more root than seed. Like a hummingbird swept up in a gale. Recklessly I'll untie the ropes and sail.
Listen to it now. I did listen to it before, and it is really beautiful. Yeah, when did you write that one?
I wrote that song about, I think, last year sometime. Yeah, last year sometime.
Cool. And What is your songwriting process like? Do you think you're kind of like an intuitive songwriter, like emotion-based? That's what I hear anyway.
Yeah, I think that's really accurate. I've tried to be the one that like follows the pop formula and writes a song based on a prompt. And, you know, I took a really amazing course a couple semesters ago on songwriting where I had to do that and write like a song a week based on prompts. And it's just not, it's not me. Like, me is processing an experience or processing what someone else has told me and turning it into something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I was especially curious about that, because you have experience at music school. And so like my last podcast, I interviewed this band, Fist Fights with Wolves, and they're this progressive rock math band. And so they're very like a bunch of different crazy time signatures and you know, outrageous chord progressions and all this stuff. And they're all music school graduates. And so they kind of had, it seems like for some people, maybe that was always in them, but like it's less of an intuitive approach to music. Like, do you feel like in music school has, like in Berkeley, it's you've lost that at all? Or what's been your experience in school?
I love this question because I feel like so many musicians, especially when they're in the heart of their experience in college, they'll be like, man, music school's sucking my soul out. You know, I'm here and I'm learning all this harmony and I'm getting away from the art that I was, you know, first in love with. And I think that's a bunch of crap. Mm-hmm. Like, so when you're creating, first of all, my job as a music therapist is to make everyone realize that they can create. But when you decide, okay, I'm going to be a songwriter, I'm going to be creating all the time now, it's your responsibility to build a toolbox, right? It's your responsibility to learn the harmony, to learn the rhythms, to learn your instrument inside and out, and to learn how to take risks and go beyond what you've learned, right? And so that, those nerdy bands that like have these crazy progressions and a different time signature every other bar and this, that, and the other thing, you know, like they're incredible because they're taking their toolbox and they're applying their very specific toolbox literally to their work, right? They're taking it and they're creating something that's interesting and challenging and all of this because that's where their heart lies. You know, I think of one of my favorite bands, Wolfpack, is just silly. Like their voicings and the things that they do, it's a jam band. It's goofy. It's music made for music nerds, mm-hmm. right? But look at the drummer from that. Well, he plays a bunch of different things, but mostly the drummer, Theo Katzman. Look at his solo stuff, and it is straight from the heart songwriting. There's still some interesting, fun little things, but it's mostly straight ahead songwriting, especially his first album. And I think that we as musicians have to have both of those sides. You know, when I write and I'm processing something, or I'm writing based on an experience, or often I'll write to process something that has been shared with me, I need to just get that out. So I'm doing a 1-4-5, maybe a minor 6 if I'm getting crazy, progression, and I'm using my strummy strum that I use for everything, and I'm just getting it out because it's not my job to be creative. But if I'm creating something to dig into my musical toolbox, then I'm sitting down at the piano because I know that inside and out, and I'm messing with voicings, and I'm adding bass lines, and I'm being a higher level musician, because being a higher level musician is what I'm focused on in that moment. Whereas in the previous example, what I'm focused on is being a higher level human being and processing what I'm dealing with.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the toolbox example as well. Because I think especially as it's like if you don't have a lot of tools, you can still create. And I think that's maybe what it means to be more advanced musicians, is just having more tools and having more options. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so where do you think your music is now? Like, do you prefer doing one way or the other, or what is your musical future looking like?
Oh, what a question. What a question, especially I am literally 4 weeks out from defending my thesis like being done with grad school. Yeah. So what my musical future look like? I'm like at the edge of the existential vacuum. Sure. So I will always be a singer-songwriter, I think. But I'm coming to peace with the fact that that's just one tiny sliver of who I am. And it's not my preferred sliver. I love playing shows once in a while, but once in a while is all I can do because I like just going and playing shows enough that I can be like, hello, friends. Here's the songs I've written to process the last 5 months. All right, now go on with your lives. I love playing keys on people's stuff because I was so scared of it for so long, and rock camp really opened my eyes to like, oh no, you were trained to do this. You can do this. Take the chance and do it. And so that's a part of me that I've really been enjoying leaning back into. But my musical future is almost 100% spent, is almost 100% going to be spent being a music therapist and developing these programs and bringing music to people who think that they don't have music. And building out that part of myself.
But you think you'll continue to play shows out? You do play now and then, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I usually don't go out and like book a show myself, but every few months I have such a great group of friends that someone will be like, hey, do you want to play this show with me? And it's always yes. I'll always make it happen. If you ask me to play a show with you, a solo show, I will be there. Because I do love doing it. I just freaking love playing music, man. Like, it's so great.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I will always say yes. But I don't necessarily put a lot of stock into that.
Sure. Yeah. You don't want to, or I don't want to put words in your mouth. But, I mean, I know I don't like the hustle of trying to book shows.
That's it. Yeah. It's the hustle. And I know that I respect people that hustle, but I just, it's not in me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was in me for a few years.
Same. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So when you do your solo shows, is it, do you do like you an acoustic guitar, or is it, do you do keys? What do you do?
I like to mostly do acoustic guitar. If I'm feeling like hauling my piano out, then I'll definitely do some old piano stuff. It's interesting because piano stuff is often more intimate for me. I think because it was my first instrument, so I played a whole bunch of songs at a show a number of months ago on keys, and they were all like me processing my college relationship that I had never played out before, and it was very vulnerable. So if you see me on keys, you'll be just respect that my heart is on my sleeve.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you have any shows coming up?
I don't have, I'm playing with the Becca J band at House of Blues in 2 weeks.
What's the Becca J band? Are you playing keys with that?
Yeah.
It's like a full band?
Yeah, I'm playing keys. It's Becca, Becca Paoni is the lead. It's all her music. Paige Miller on drums. Alan Cheatham on bass. I always say his last name wrong. I think once I called him Alan Cheatham. It's not his name. yep. So it's really fun. It's like bluesy, rocky music.
Cool.
Yeah.
And who else do you play with a lot around here? I definitely, like, I see your name come up all the time. Like, I don't even, like, I tried to look for, like, I don't know if, do you have, like, a Facebook page or a website for your own music?
I used to have a Facebook page, but I never updated it. Yeah. So I just made my normal Instagram public and just left it at that.
Yeah, it's like, even though you don't have your own, like, website or anything, like, I keep seeing your name pop up on events. So it's like the power of having friends.
I know,
and a good network,
it really
right?
is. Yeah, that's all it is. I think that, like, the key to life and, like, being able to play out is, like, just be nice to people and put it out there that you want to play. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably play pretty frequently.
And say yes.
Yeah, and always say yes. Mm-hmm. Unless you can't say yes, in which case you can't say yes.
Sure. And do you go outside of San Diego at all for shows? If someone was like, will you play with us in LA in 2 weeks or maybe 4 weeks after your
school? Talk to me after school. No, yeah, definitely. But there was a period of time that Becca and I used to be in a band called The Bet together, and we went up to LA a couple times to play. So that's always fun.
Yeah. What do you feel like the scene is like in San Diego? We talked about that a little bit, but like especially compared to LA.
Yeah. I don't know if I can compare it to LA.
Or at least compare it to Boston.
Oh, yeah. So Boston, the scene is interesting because it's everyone's a college kid. So everyone's like, I'm going to make it big in 3 years when I graduate, mm-hmm. or I'm going to drop out and move here and make it big, right? So everyone's playing and it's really fun, but it's like you're either a college kid that's going to make it big or you're an adult who's working a job, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a lot in between. I think it'd be interesting to experience that scene now as like an adult with a job, though, because maybe sure. there'd be more music.
Yeah.
Here in San Diego, though, I was thinking this last night. I was at Casbah for a metal show, and I was like looking around, and I didn't recognize anyone. And it was weird that I didn't know anyone at this show, and it made me kind of reflect on the San Diego scene. I think that we all have our bubbles. You know, we have our singer-songwriter bubble. We've got our like jam band bubble, the metal bubble, whatever, the hip hop bubble. And each little bubble is really unique and great, like wonderful. But like, we don't often like come together, right? Our bubbles kind of stay separate. So that's like a very interesting part of the scene, I think.
Mm. Yeah, I think so too. But I think it's, and I'm wondering if you've experienced as well, but at least I did experience Boston a little bit as someone who was working there, that San Diego, I feels a little more open and accepting to outsiders. I don't know. New England's a little more rough. Like you kind of have to prove yourself.
I think that's just like New England culture perfectly yeah. encapsulated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very true. And I think that's true, not even just the music scene. I think that's true of like culture in general in Boston versus San Diego. Like, Boston is just a harder, darker place because it's cold and snowy there.
Yeah. I think it's still cold and snowy right now.
Yes, it is. I can confirm that. But, like, the thing is, I say that with, like, the most affection.
Oh, sure.
Because Boston is my home, and I am very much, I still consider myself a Boston girl, and, like, it's a big part of my identity, and so... Yeah, I think it's important to recognize the value of that hardness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, San Diego's your home now? Do you have plans to go back to,
I don't know,
New England?
Is my mom going to listen to this podcast?
I don't know.
If mom listens, then no, I'm going home. But no, I don't know. I couldn't imagine leaving San Diego right now.
It'd be really hard.
It'd be really hard. Like, we have, like, oh, we have such a good crew here. Like, yeah. So many good people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're also, like, we talked a little bit about the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls. Because you're on the board, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you're pretty involved. So camp is coming up, right? Mm-hmm. And still spots left for girls?
Yep, there's a few spots left for the older girls, I believe.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And are you going to be volunteering all
of course. How could I not?
Teaching keys?
So we'll see how it goes. I think I'm going to be helping Mel out with some of the like assembly stuff. I'm going to be bouncing around. Definitely going to want to coach a band.
Yes.
Because that's the best thing. So for ladies camp, as you know, I didn't coach keys because we didn't have keys. Mm-hmm. And it was like a really cool experience to be able to. It wasn't like, oh, during instrument instruction, I wasn't doing anything. It was like, no, during instrument instruction, I could come into the basses and play with you guys while you practiced. I could go into the guitar room and offer my advice with guitar since I'm closer to being a beginner than the instructors who are incredible are, right? And I went into the vocal lab and we just did like live karaoke. I just like, they came up with their songs. They would hum a little bit if I didn't know it, and I would just play it for them, and they sang, and it was really cool because it was like their favorite songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was, yeah. So I don't know. We'll see if I'm a keys instructor or if I'm just a floating lady.
Awesome. So if anyone wants to learn more about music therapy, where's a good place to, or at least, you know, about what you do or your organization or anything?
Sure. So music therapy, you can go to musictherapy.org, which is the national website. And then for me, you can reach out via email. It's littlebyrdmusic@gmail.com, or just, you know, smoke signal me or something.
So Bird, is that your family name?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
I know. I was really handed a gift with that one.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks, Emma, for coming to the studio. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for chatting.
Sure. It's fine. Thank you for listening to the Sunshine Sound Podcast. If you like what you heard, you can find older episodes at sunshinesoundcenter.org. You can also rate us, review us, follow us on Facebook or Instagram or even Twitter, not just to support the Sunshine Sound Center, but really to support all of the musicians who take the time to chat with me and to support the local music scene here. So I just want to give one more thank you to Tommy Bobcat for help with the audio engineering and for providing that sweet theme music. So that's all I have for you today, and I will talk to you again soon. Have a good one.